Okay, let's just recap a little bit where we got to. We began the session this morning just using this idea here. Actions reflect choices, which reflects an understanding, a mental construct. So we've spent the morning beginning to build a mental construct of thinking about how we minister. A way of thinking that will affect choices, which will affect actions. So we talked about going to the lost, discipling our generation, building community, developing leaders and laborers. And then we just ended up thinking together about the concept of generations. Just giving you some tracks to think down, some doors to walk into. Now, let me just finish this mental construct, and then we're going to see how this can help us and work for us. Let's talk about laying foundations. Behind our home, where we were moved into a new building development in 1999, and the land behind us has been vacant, quite a stretch of land since we got there, but they've developed it now, and they're right behind our house. Fortunately, they've dug down so it's not going to block the view. They're putting a new house in. And I've just been watching them, it's because my office, one of my home office overlooks it, is the work that goes into actually laying the foundations. And it was just such a good reminder to see them mark the thing out, go down, put the concrete and so on. And you realize that is essential to the shape of the building that will emerge and the capacity to actually secure the building. Well, what are the foundations that we need to think of that will affect how we go to the lost, how we disciple, how we will build community, how we develop leaders to increase the likelihood of generations? And what I want to do is say that underlying foundations, there are several building blocks that together make up the foundations. And let's just talk about some of these foundations. The first foundational building block is vision. Or by that I mean, what is God asking of us in this ministry context? So the first building block of laying foundations would be vision. What is God asking of us? Are we clear on this in our context? I was just talking with someone over lunch, and we were actually talking about that. What is their vision? Let me illustrate. We'll just build this up. So vision. What God is asking of you and what you're trusting Him for determines so much of what you will do and not do in your context. Let me illustrate. I'll use ISM. Doug, you're here, and you can comment on this if you want to. A number of years ago, I had the privilege of just coming alongside ISM at the International Students Ministry, and we were working through a lot of this stuff. So when we looked at this whole building block of vision, the question became, what was God asking of ISM? What were they trusting Him for? And as they talked and so on, it became, you could see two possibilities. One, and I'll polarize them a little bit. One, is God asking us to have thriving, growing, large ministries to international students here in the United States, full stop? Is that what He's asking of us? Or is God asking of us to minister, to reach and minister among international students in such a way that they will return to their place of origin, largely the 1040 window, and live fruitfully for Christ in the hard places of the world. The way ISM answers that question will affect how they go to the lost, who they're trying to reach. How would that affect the way they disciple? Just talk to me. How would that affect the way they disciple? Clarifying that issue of vision. Mike. Sure. Yes, they did. They did a lot of research, which I'll come to.
No.
Yeah, you did. First option was a large, thriving ministry to international students, full stop. So success is the size of the ministry here in the U.S. among international students. Small or large? Yeah. That would, but see, so you're not thinking beyond the context of them being there for 4 years while they're right in front of you. That's the contrast.
So you could have a large ministry international
here and the conference of rising. You definitely could, but I'm talking about what's the vision. That's what I'm talking about. Is the vision to just have, and I'm polarizing, is the vision to have a large ministry to international students here in the United States, full stop? It is. As an end in itself. Yeah, an end in itself. Thank you. Oh, you don't use full stop. You know, you say period. Sorry.
That's it. There you go.
You got it.
Oh, no. Oh, all right. I was waiting for
it. Yeah. Hey, you need to. Thanks, Mike, for asking. You just, Jim got it. He lived in New Zealand for a while. He understood it. Man, just when you think you've arrived. Yeah. No, so, okay. The contrast is not, is it incompatible to have a large ministry and have it accomplish the purpose of sending students back? But as you'll see, that was a tension to be wrestled with. Okay, so back on the question. If the vision is to reach international students here and send them back to the difficult places of the world, if that's your vision, so that the large ministry here is a means to it, not the end in itself, see that? What difference would it make, for example, to the way you disciple? Paul.
I think one of the things is, you know, you have to take it very seriously, but the context they're going into, so whatever you allow you to help build into their lives is compatible and contextualized where they're going to be going to find a way to go in and how that affects.
Yeah. Good.
I think one thing that we do know is we have a lot of aging students, and one of the things that it becomes very hard for them to still stay connected with their family, especially when they come to Christ.
Yeah.
And I think one of the ways would be very different how we disciple them is that we help them think through how can they still maintain the relational connection with their family and extend the family, even after
sure.
they become Christ.
Sure. Yeah. So one issue you would wrestle with is how do they live out the life of discipleship and communicate what has happened to them with their families back in their place of origin? That would become a huge piece of the discipleship process. What forms would you use? Would you use forms that are culture and time bound to where they are? Or are you using forms that will enable them to live this out when they return? Think about building community. What will community look like? Now, I realize there's a lot of factors, and you can't be overly pure about this because they're in a different culture as it is. So, but are you going to help them in a way that sets them up for a real struggle when they return, because when they return to mainland China, they can't go on Sunday mornings to the building. It's not there. Do you see how it affects your vision? What it is you're trusting God for affects all of these things that affects generations.
I recently befriended a person whose family
made
great sacrifices for them to come to this country. So to think of them now leaving this country to go back to that country really was really an insult to their family. Because they've given up so much that they could come to this country and enjoy the benefits of this country. So then to go back was insulting.
Yeah.
For them. So that was a tremendous barrier
for
them.
Yeah, that's good. Vision. What are we asking God for? What are we trusting Him for? The second building block that flows out of that. Prayer. Laying a foundation of prayer. Sure, please do. That's good, Darren, and I hope that by the end of the session we will have touched on some tracks or some ways of addressing that very issue. That'd be good. The second area is prayer. See, because what God is asking of you is beyond us. It's faith. It's beyond us. See, faith, if it's present and visible and just always doable, you don't need faith. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. So the response to what God is asking of us is a big part of the response is prayer. Laying a foundation of prayer. That is a vital foundational building block. Now, here, I would say focus on, I'm going to run out of room, focus on Christ in a group of people. Paul, the idea of laying the foundation of Christ in a foundational group of people. Now, let's think about this one through. So our vision is to reach mainland Chinese who are studying on this campus in order that some of them will, the bulk of them will one day return and be the carriers of the gospel in mainland China. It's beyond us. We pray. Now, what do I do now on the campus? If that is our vision, I need now to focus my prayers on and my efforts on a group of mainland Chinese people on this campus, because that's our vision. Now, I now come back to the issue of what is the foundation we're endeavoring to lay in their lives. Now, Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians 3 that you can lay no other foundation in a person's life other than Christ. So Paul, in his ministry, sought to lay the foundation of Jesus Christ. And he would lay that foundation in foundational groups of people. So you say, well, if this is in 1 Corinthians 3, he's saying you can't lay any other foundation. Who's he writing to? He's writing to the Corinthians. Go back to Acts 18 and have a look and see who were the foundational groups of people in Acts 18, in which he laid the foundation of Christ. So who were some of them? Can you remember out of Acts 18? Just a little test of our Bible knowledge here. Okay, Aquila and Priscilla. Then there's this bloke, I was going to say. This guy, Titius Justus. He was right next door to the synagogue. Then there was Crispus, the synagogue ruler. So here were, and their households, and their families. Paul laid the foundation of Christ in these people's lives. Now, what were the indicators for Paul that the foundation had been solidly established in the lives of those people? As Paul looked to see whether the foundation of Christ had been laid, what did he look for? Faith, hope, and love. Then he talks, and I can never remember it, your labor prompted by love. What are the other ones? Work of faith. See? Work of faith, labor of love, patience of hope. Are they working? Are they laboring? Are they patient? Connected to faith, hope, and love, connected to Christ, who is the source of all of those. If you don't lay, if you're laying, see, Paul says you can't lay another foundation. Now, if you lay another foundation in the lives of those mainland Chinese, what might be some of the other foundations you could lay? What might, just this brainstorm, what might be some other foundations you could lay, be laying in their life? Laying in their life? Establishing. That could be contradictory to laying the foundation of Christ. How to succeed in the American business world. Things that are cultural to living here. That foundation will not carry the weight of the life of Christ in their lives and when they return.
Actually, that's pretty serious, because you have to have a really pretty good working knowledge
of that culture
in order to be able to understand what's relevant, what's irrelevant.
Yes, ideally, but I think this is what I think you need is perhaps, and this is possible, you need to keep your eyes clearly fixed upon Jesus. You need to understand the gospel, and you need to understand your own culture. You need to understand the way your own culture impacts on the gospel. To be able to distinguish, is this Christ of the scriptures, or is this Christ of the North American way of seeing things? That's the understanding we need to grow in. So, vision, prayer, focus. The fourth building block, what we could call access and building rapport. Why is this access? How do I gain access to people? How do I build rapport to them? That is a vital aspect of foundation building, because it answers this question. How will those we are trying to reach perceive us? Now, you think, what's he talking about? Let me try and illustrate that. In the inner city of Detroit, we have a Navigator staff couple living out their lives on a street that, well, you walk down the street and, you know, there's a crack house across the road. It's just, it's unbelievable. They're there, they live. Now, their vision is to reach the people around them in the neighborhood, see the gospel take root in some lives, and flow through those lives into the lives of the people in that neighborhood in ways that the kingdom is advanced, the neighborhood is transformed, and so on. And to see that happen generationally. It is totally beyond this couple. They are in prayer. Now, they have decided, Who are these people that are in the neighborhood? Many of them, most of them are Mexican, either born here or immigrants. So the language will be Hispanic. The faith tradition will be Catholic. Now, if your vision is to see the gospel planted in this neighborhood, then that will determine your focus. You might have a hungry, available person who's a Protestant, so-and-so ethnic background, and they are perhaps the one or two in the neighborhood. You're not going to focus there. That's not going to take you to the neighborhood. Now, the other issue is this, when it comes to access and rapport. This couple I'm telling you about are white. They didn't know Spanish. And until recently, they were Protestant. Doing what? What's fake faith? No, because they're apostolic. There's no way they can do that. What can they do? What are some of the choices they can make to gain access and rapport?
They can actually go to a local parish and put themselves under the leader, voluntarily under the leadership of the local church.
That is what they've done. Some of you may want to talk to me about this afterwards. They have become Catholic. The child is baptized into the faith. They attend the local parish. What else have they done or could do?
My pastor, who was an associate pastor at our church for many years, a youth pastor, couldn't have children, and many years ago they adopted a black child and an Indian child, which that was just the way it was fine. And they had no idea that 20 years later it was going to be part of the way that they incorporated themselves into a new ministry up in Phoenix as it becomes the head church in a very in a multicultural area.
Yeah.
That was just one of the enhancements. So, I mean, someone could deliberately adopt some children of various...
Yeah, you could. That would be another.
Because I know that couple, they chose to go to Mexico and learn Spanish.
Yeah. They went to Mexico. We raised the funds to send them to Mexico. You use your funds, which are mission-critical issues. And they learned Hispanic. Because the messenger and the message become inseparable. This is what apostolic people do. If you are already of the Catholic tradition, if you already speak Hispanic, you already live there, you're an insider. You're there already. They are outsiders who, to the extent that they can, to the extent that they're able, they can never become full insiders. That's why the key for them is the first people they reach who will be the insiders. But they have done everything they can for the sake of access and rapport. Now, lest you think that applies to isolated situations. If I am reaching business people in the upper echelon of CEOs, I've got to think the same way. If we're trying to reach unchurched people in my neighborhood, I've got to think the same way. If we need to say, what are we on this campus for? What are we on this base for? Who will we focus on? How will it affect our access and rapport, not just as individuals, but collectively? If we are there to reach non-believing students as well as Christian students, we have to ask the question, how do we look to the non-believing students? It's all those sorts of questions. It's the mental construct. And then this one, teaming. These are all foundational issues that you need to consider as we build our construct of ministry. Teaming. We can't go it alone, but who do we team with? Again, let me illustrate it from ISM. See, this is the point I'm trying to make, then I'll come back and illustrate it. You cannot make the decision who you will team with in isolation from all these. Because the decision you make here can greatly affect what happens here and what happens here. Let me illustrate it. In the context of ISM, we ask this question. Doug, feel free to correct me at any time here if I overstate it or get it in my enthusiasm here. One of the things we asked was, in the ISM context on a campus, who do you decide to, this was until recently, in the last few years. The question was, who do you team with? Doug, how would, until say the last few years, how might that question have been answered? So you've got ISM staff on the campus, who do they team with? Did you hear that? Generally, until recently, anyone who was interested in international students and reaching them, we teamed with them. Didn't just pray for them, do the occasional things, we teamed with them. Okay? Question. If a team is a group of people collaborating together around a common purpose, if you team with anyone working with international students, what's going to be the common purpose? The lowest common denominator you can agree on to do together. But hold it. Isn't God calling us to something? He's not just calling us to have a ministry presence among international students. I see the failure to understand the difference between partnering, treating people as brothers and sisters in Christ, praying for, even sharing some resources, and who we team with in pursuit of our calling. If you find yourself operating in a teaming context with people who don't share, we're not on the same page here and here, some of you know how much energy you can lose there trying to make that thing work. And why is that so important? Because it affects what God's calling us to be about and the generational movement of the gospel. I have found it helpful to think of, in the teaming context, three, I don't know whether levels is the word, but three aspects of thinking about this. For a team to be able to work together a common purpose, in light of what we're talking about here, there has to be what I would say, I don't know a better way of saying this, spiritual trust. We're brothers and sisters in Christ. That's a given. Secondly, there needs to be relational trust. But you can have those two and still struggle to team together. Because you have not got trust around, do we share a common calling and ministry approach and philosophy? Now again, I'm talking teaming, not partnering in a thanking God for what everyone's doing in the body. That's not what I'm talking about. Darren. Yeah. As long as you clarify expectations. Sure. I think you can partner, but the problem was it was teaming. It was teaming, and the only common ground was the context.
Would an example of partnering be the various campus ministries?
Yeah,
all
sure.
The Omega.
Yeah. Or if for us in the Metro Mission, there are many initiatives of the body of Christ taking place in metro areas with whom you partner, you pray for, share resources, and so on. But when it gets to it, to team with a group of people in a context, to team, to labor alongside each other, you've got to share common calling, not just common calling. I find you could even share some calling. It's a common approach to the ministry. It's very difficult. Like if one approach is a very organizational approach. Just get everyone together and so on, and yours is a more organic approach. You're going to have trouble teaming. Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, when I think of, yeah, a network overlaps, I think, a bit with partnering, but you can use it in a variety of ways. When I think of a network, because it is a word we think of quite a bit in the metro areas around the concept of insidership. When I think of a network is a connectedness between people who share a common idea or value, like maybe the insider. There is communication between them. There is occasional connectedness between them. And there's movement of coaches and leaders between them. A common concept or idea, though they may be very diverse in their context. So like in a metro area, you might have somebody living in a business setup, somebody working out of the local church, somebody working in suburbia, urban. But the thing they share in common, even though their contexts are very different, is they want to live as insiders. They're committed to spiritual transformation and so on. So these people can network with one another. Okay, now let me back up, and then I want to get you doing something in groups. What I've endeavored to do here is to take this aspect of laying foundations and break it out a little bit and show you the interconnectedness between these. And again, it's to say that this mental construct enables you to ask certain questions, be aware of certain things, and to help you make choices as to what you don't do or will do in your ministry context. As we think about what God is asking of us, how we will gain access and rapport, who we will focus on, that affects the way we go to the lost. It affects all of these to generations. In a moment, I'm going to say, how can this help us actually in our leading and our ministry? Before we do that, I want to just stay with it a minute longer about how it helps our thinking. And if you look on your, I think you've got it on your, let me just check here whether it's on your hand. No, you've got it on this sheet. No, well, hold it. We're sorry. Yeah. This is what I want you, it's not actually on your sheet, but it's to go in under the area heading group activity. Okay, you found that, I think it's on page 4, is it? I want us to think, I'm going to give, just stay with me. These three groups, your area will be going to the lost. Okay, I'll explain what we're going to do in a minute. These three groups going to the lost. These two groups discipling our generation. These two groups building community. Okay, this is what I'd like you to talk about. What are some of the implications or differences it would make for you to approach going to the lost, discipling, building community, with foundations and generations in mind? Is that question clear? What are some of the implications? What are some of the decisions you might make if, as you go to the lost, as you disciple, as you build community, you're having in your mind, how will this affect generations? How will these foundations affect the way we go to the lost, the way we decide? Building community. So remember the question is, keeping generations and foundations in mind, how might that affect the way you think about building community? So these two groups over the back here, let's just hear a couple of thoughts.
You keep the family in the perspective and draw them in as appropriate.
you hear that? Others?
The assumption is that community, building community, is about Christians rather than considering is it also about non-Christians and what would it look like to build community with non-believers and believers together.
Just on that, I think one of the implications is the difference between, as you think about community, and I think I know many of many ways we're thinking about this is, now I'm an historian, not a mathematician, but I understand you can think of a centered set and a bounded set, and maybe I could illustrate that. Some of you may know that in the outback of Australia, there are just absolute ginormous, what they call cattle or sheep stations. They call them stations. That's a farm or a ranch. And they stretch for miles and miles and miles. Well, there were some tourists visiting this Australian, you'd call him rancher, station owner. And the tourists looked around, and then they got talking with him, and they said, you know, there's no fences here. Why don't the cattle just wander away? Why don't they just wander off? And he said, it's not a problem. We just find water, dig a well, and all the cattle move towards it. Now, you see, a bounded set would say, you put a fence up, and you're in, or you're out. Centered set is Jesus is the well. And in our community, there are people at different places who are moving towards Jesus. Some have Jesus living in them, others are yet to. But the way we do community, and this is the difficult one, means all can be a part of us as they move towards Jesus. You see, that might be one of the implications. What does that look like in your context? Another illustration, well, let me get a few more. Any other thoughts, other implications? Yeah, let's get a couple of them. Mike says you guys had several more, so...
Here we had several. Joe just remembered. No, go ahead. Okay, Joe mentioned no one owns anyone. So it's not like this is my person and this is your person. So there's more a web of relationships. Another one is how do you define membership in a group or a community? Is it people you do things with, or you know, how you informally define membership is significant. And then also the level of activity. So some communities could be so busy doing community stuff with each other that they have no time for other things. And all those are very important as you're launching out.
Okay, thanks. Let's talk about disciple. Did you?
One of the things that came across a couple of times was thinking through what would look weird in the expression of our community to the non-Christians. And Sherry just talked about having helped their students think through what looks weird.
Again, that relates to your calling. Okay, let's think about discipling our generation. Where were we? Over here? These two groups? Wish this didn't take so long to get a comment. let's work at this. Come on. You Who's going to... You don't have anything to say?
We thought it was a good idea.
Yeah. Man, I tell you, why do they give me this one after lunch?
We're modeling the Navigator small group works better concept, so we have something to share. Number one thing, which we came to second, but should have come to first, is that let God disciple me. That means spending time alone, maybe hours at a time, learning to hear the voice of God as opposed to the voice of the devil, and be in community where people can give us feedback as to whether they agree that what God says to me is what are the sorts of things God says and does. And then be involved, of course, in deeply involved with other people, listening to them, caring for them, relating to them as a peer. You know, we have this mentor-mentoree thing going on, but I don't think there's anybody who is a mentor that doesn't think he gets as much or more from the mentoree. It's not a one-way street. It's a bilateral respect and teaching. So you really build into the individual lives, as well as, of course, getting to the obvious things of getting into Scripture. But these other sorts of things of caring, relationship, being vulnerable, trusting, and all these sorts of things are basic to the ability to lay a strong foundation.
You want to say anything?
Other than making sure that your vision for your particular situation, for your generation, where you are living, is really sharp.
Yeah.
Compared context, you know, I to have a right to see generations, to have a
Yeah. Good. Let me add a couple to this. One would be, in our discipling, are we laying the foundation of Christ? Or are we laying a foundation of methods and forms and programs and whatever? Is it Christ who's being laid? Secondly, the forms we do use, are they transferable for them into their context? Or are they the ones that are having to adjust to the forms that I have out of my context? Who's doing the adjusting? That might be another one. Another one might be, how do I live with the tension between wanting to see them mature in holiness and not get extracted? When is it appropriate to be extracted? Those are the sort of issues you'd be thinking about. Because you're not just thinking of discipling in isolation from the other five aspects or the other five components. You see, you're thinking about, how do I disciple this person in ways that this will flow not just Christ formed in them, but Christ flowing through them to generations. You'll be thinking about these things. How do I help them express what Christ is doing in them, in their inner life and in their life issues of relationships, in language that they can relate to those who are their friends and family who don't know Christ? In other words, how do I help them live authentically? How do I make sure I don't give them a language that comes out of my background but doesn't translate into their background? Do you see some of the implications? All of those have big implications for where we're going with this. Now, let's just talk about going to the lost. Any thoughts here?
One thought I had is just the need for, but the need for making things simple enough that they're reproducible. Mm-hmm. It's talking about laying foundations that will lead to generations. If you make it so complicated that only someone who knows this much stuff can do it, the average person is never going to think, oh, I can do it better.
Good. Good. Simple and transferable. Excellent. Jim?
Prayer. There was somebody in the Salvation Army that said, go for sinners and go for the worst. So to have a real breakthrough in evangelism would require, I'm sure, prayer. So just praying this big audacious prayers that we could break into this people or get that guy or get this couple into God's kingdom. Because if we want to lay a foundation in that particular, you know, part of society.
Good. Any other thoughts? Bill?
One of the things that struck me is going to the lost, discipling our generation, building community, developing leaders and laborers are all to-do things. They're all action things. And a lot of the comments that we heard so far really apply across the board to each of them. In particular, though, I think as far as laying foundations, the vision is really critical. What is God asking of us? Because we can go out and go to the lost. I mean, we can do that right now. We can all take a break and go out on the streets and talk to lost people. But without a vision of what God's asking us to do, we're only busy doing things. We need to make sure that we've got the right vision and we're focused on what God's wanting us to do.
Well, I think of two different philosophies or workshop settings that I've set into on how to pioneer a ministry, how to start, particularly in a campus context. And one of them was really oriented around, you know, step one, what you got to do is you have to survey the campus, you have to find some believers that you can begin to kind of start a group with, and with the goal of trying to start a large group meeting or to try to create believers' Bible studies and stuff like that. So finding believers, getting people from your local church who will get in on this as well. And then from there, we'll begin our campus ministry. And one of the first things we'll try to do with those people is teach them how to relate to the lost. And so that ministry philosophy versus one that says we're going to start by really sowing broadly onto the campus, into the lost, and trusting God that over the next couple of years, He will raise up a generation of a few men or a few core women who will be leaders, but it's really done in the context of that staff person starting among the lost and really trusting God that He'll raise up the first generation of that ministry, either people who come to Christ through that or believers who do come on board with them. It'll still be in the same context. It'll be doing IBSs and stuff like that. And so on what foot one of those will continue to have generations that goes to the lost and one of them won't.
Good comments. All I'm endeavoring to do here is to help us see how this affects our thinking. Because I want to wrap up at 3. And what I want to talk to you about is we've looked at our calling. How could what we're talking about here help us practically lead towards our calling? The first thing I would mention as we think about this, as leaders, whatever our context, is I think one of the first steps in being able to move from where we are to where God wants us to be. And it's not that we're way down here and that's where we need to be. We're somewhere in here. This is what God's calling us to be. This is where we are. How do we step forward into that? The first one is the willingness to courageously name and describe the current realities in your ministry context. The willingness and the courage to name and describe the current realities in your ministry context in relationship to the calling. Now, or the Navigator Corps, what God is asking of us and who He's asking us to be. Where are we in reality in our ministry context? Max DePriest, how many of you have read some of his stuff on leadership yet? In one of his books, and I'm trying to think which one, I think it's The Art of Leadership. The first act of leadership is to define current reality. Why do you suppose he says that? I think in our context, the willingness to do that in reference to our core creates the gap that fuels our prayers, inspires our faith, and shapes our priorities. Now let me just ask you this though. I have found it difficult, personally and to help others, be willing to honestly define current realities. What is going well and what is not going so well. It's not just what's not going well. It's both. Why is that, or why can that be so difficult to do? Let's just talk about that for a minute. Darren? So, yeah, good. You might just end up, I don't know what to do with that. So it's a bit scary. One here and then one there. Yeah.
The leader really has to humble themselves to make it not about them. So it's not going to affect their self.
That's very good, very good. See, I think you're on to it. I think one of the things that makes it so hard is reputation. And here's the big, here's the kicker. If you have allowed your identity to get attached to the success of your ministry, you will create, if necessary, illusions about your ministry to preserve your identity. If you have allowed your identity to become attached to the well-being of your ministry, you will create illusions about your ministry to safeguard your identity. Okay. Thank you. It's a very good comment. Thank you. Doug and then John. Can you speak up? It's very good. Just on that, let me make that comment. I think any assessment of current realities needs, as best occurs, in a team context with trusted, and this is where trust is so important, but a trusted person with some experience from the outside, because some of you may be familiar with that thing called the Johari window. How many of you are familiar with that? Yeah. No, let me explain. See, so if this is a ministry context and I'm involved with these people and I've come in to visit them to help them with this, there are things they know, but I don't know, but I can't help them unless I know. So what does this require of them if I'm to be of use to them? Willingness to disclose. Now, there may be things I see that they don't see. They're blind to them. That requires me gaining permission to contribute my insights. See, that's why, if you don't have a team context like that, you just see what you see, and you may miss some things. John, do you want to say something?
I'm thinking one of the aspects would be working through pain of dismantling some things in your ministry, and the other side would maybe be working through the pain of constructing some things in your ministry, because some ministries, the other side, need to construct some stuff that they don't have.
Thank Wayne, and then let me just make a couple more comments. Thanks, John.
So one of the other things, too, that if you have weaknesses in your own life, that those things would exist in your ministry, too, that if someone would come in and see those things, then obviously those weaknesses are going to be uncovered in your own life. Now, obviously, one of the answers for this is if, as a person, you're open to all those things in a community and there's a safe place, that all those things are being dealt with and there's a team that's sharing those things with you, then all those things that we've uncovered probably are already being out on the surface and they're being dealt with. So there's already a safe place where all those things are being uncovered. So,
thanks. Let me keep moving if you don't. Let me give you an example. As I mentioned to you, I work with ISM, partnered with ISM on this. And as I think many of you know, one of the things ISM did, God led them to do, was to courageously address the issue of what were the current realities. In other words, when they took our navigator calling and looked at what was actually happening. Now, what did they do? They worked on it as a team. They moved beyond anecdotal evidence. They moved beyond impressions. And they did their homework. So, some of the ISM leadership team visited Asia and tracked down many of the students who had returned out of their international ministries and sat with them and just listened and asked questions. They went and spent time with our Asia executive team, Badu, Alan Chung, and Ridgway out in Asia. They asked them lots of questions about the returning alumni. They went onto the campuses. They tracked what had happened to people and so on and so on. Remember, the questions they were asking and what they were looking for were shaped by and flowed out of what it is they believed God was wanting them to be about, their calling. See, that's important. The reference point is what is God asking of us, because that's the set of lens that we put on to look at the context. If you don't get that clear, you're just looking. So what is it you're looking at and for? And I've listed for you some of the conclusions they came up with. I won't read them all, but let me highlight a couple of them. The first one was in the area of advancing the gospel. So this, they painted a picture of what it is they longed to see. This is what they said. We envision the gospel moving and spreading broadly through family, professional, and relational networks, carried by alumni living as fruitful insiders and influencers, making a difference in the fabric of their community and society. But the current reality is that the gospel is having limited impact through our alumni, often getting stuck in cultural or religious cul-de-sacs if it is moving at all. A few are making a real difference as political and business leaders. Then they moved on to think about laborers for a lifetime. Then they talked about this one, among the lost. We envision returnees, that's their calling, we envision returnees living among the lost in such ways that whole families, workplaces, and natural relational networks are saturated with the good news in their Buddhist, Muslim, Hindu, communist, animist, or secular societies. But the current reality is that many of our alumni soon become entrenched in a church subculture, often becoming isolated from their natural relational networks among the lost. Can you see why I said this takes courage? This takes courage. Now, and it takes great leadership too, because a lot of good things are happening as well. And Dave Lyons wrote a great letter to the staff, has interacted with the staff. This is part of a whole process. This did not, I mean, Doug, how would you comment on, I mean, this could defeat your staff totally. How did you avoid this defeating and totally discouraging your staff? Good. Yeah. Okay, now this, see, once you get clarity of understanding around our calling, and then as you're willing, you can do this exercise of current realities at a variety of levels. Audrey and I can sit down and do it for our own lives. We can take those values. How are we doing? In a passion to love, know, and become like Jesus Christ, and so on. We can take it. We could take it at the level of the small ministry team we're part of, or we can take it. I can do it in my responsibilities as leading the metro with the team I have. We can do that at that level, whatever. But once you do that, I have found it's catalytic. It's catalytic in its impact, in leading to faith, dependence, and the willingness to say, how will we move forward into the gap between where we currently are and where God's calling us. And what we're going to do, I think I'll leave it till we pick up tomorrow, is I want to say how this I'll just get you to do something before we finish, but I think rather than begin it, where I'll begin tomorrow is I want to answer this question. How can we use this mental construct as the means to step from where we are as we address the current realities to where God may be taking us? How can this help us practically? How do we use this so that we're not, as I say, overwhelmed and swamped? Because there will always be a gap between where God's calling us and where we are currently. That's the journey. But my encouragement to you today is this. I think God has given us a glorious calling and reaffirmed a set of values that are deep within our hearts, either as realities or aspirations and desires. I think our values express both. You know, where we're up to, but where we long to be. But then there are current realities. And I pray that God would give us the courage and faith as leaders to name and describe the current realities. And with faith and courage, together. And remember the staff conference, you know, which side of the stage we're going to do this on. But together, step into that gap and take the next steps. That's where we'll pick up tomorrow. How could this construct help us with that? How can we use it? But as we finish my time with you today, I want you to just take 5 minutes and write down one takeaway for you today. From the two sessions we've had today, what is one takeaway for you that you don't want to lose? It may have been a thought. It may have been an insight. It may have been I need to do this. I want to get on to this, or whatever. Just take a few minutes, then we'll share that, and then we'll break. There are takeaways from this time. That can be an encouragement to the rest of us. Is anyone willing to do that? Yes, no. Thanks, Chris.
For me, the takeaway is that unless you have the solid foundation, and you described that as having a very clear vision that you need to have for where you are in your generation, much prayer, real access to people, a genuine focus that God has asked you to concentrate on, and then an active team. You can't just do it alone. Unless you actually have a strong foundation, what you have may flourish for a time while you're present, but there'll be some serious cracks, and it won't last. So there won't be any future generations.
Anyone else? Just a takeaway for them. Keenan.
Well, this might be kind of obvious, but this is really helpful for me to, because I think in the back of my mind, I know what I want, and I know what it looks like, but the intermediate steps of how do I get from what I want to do, what I want to have happen, to what it's going to look like. There's some intermediate steps here that are very helpful to help me think through to some practical points, practical steps that I can do to bring about the vision. So, yeah.
Good. Thank you. And we'll build on that more tomorrow as well, just on that. How do we use this to bridge the gap? Joe?
My takeaway is I think the Lord just has put a little process in my mind that he wants me to go through. And I don't think it's super complicated, but it's just, I think the last thing that Mike said about the willingness and courage to name and describe the current realities, like I want to do that on my own. I want to get alone with the Lord and do that. And then I want to think through them, those realities in light of these, I think it's the 6 critical factors. And then, you know, make my own conclusions. But then I want to do that with my team, too, and do it with them, even though there's people on my team that are so new to what we're doing, it's just going to be so good for them, I think, to talk about it. And then we need to probably make some decisions, some big and some small. But at least then it might include them a little bit and not just drop a bombshell on them, like, well, we're going to cancel this, you know. So then they kind of know what we're doing, at least to some degree.
Thanks, Joe. Just one more, a couple more? Okay, let me pray, and then we'll take a break. Lord, thanks for this time, and thank you for just leading us and guiding us, and just continue to be our teacher. Help us to be followers of yours. In Jesus' name, amen.